taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach a rising generation to be free. You know, the number of times I've heard lately that we have to do something to save ourselves. We had to lock down and shut down and allow the government to just trample our rights to save us from COVID. We need gun control laws to save us from bad people with guns. We need election reform to protect us from, well, election laws that certain people don't like. And now I'm going to talk about other protections that government says we have to let the government violate the Constitution, violate the law, and trample on our rights to protect us. It reminds me of a quote from Richard Henry Lee. He said, "To say that a bad government must be established for fear of anarchy is really saying we should kill ourselves for fear of dying." And I think that's really the state that apparently many, if not most, Americans are in nowadays. This idea that we must have government to infringe on our rights to protect us from ourselves. And one of the latest examples of that is this attempt to deal with scary big tech. Now, those of you who've followed me for any length of time know I've already been kicked off of Facebook. I'm surprised I'm still on YouTube and Twitter. Facebook first wouldn't let me post, then they banned my account, and they never really said why. Somehow they said, well, I violated some community standard. They never said what, they never said when, they never said how. And I have, since that happened, stated it is Facebook's right as a private organization to determine who and who cannot use their platform. I have no legal basis for demanding that Facebook allow me to have an account. Now, I might have cause to say they violated a license that I had with them or a contract in the form of terms of service that they violated, but then the federal government decided they were going to deny my right to petition the government for a redress of grievance by protecting them, saying, well, because they thought it was something I posted was bad, they have the right to not be sued for violating the terms of service and the contract that we had for marketing. So again, we have government taking a potentially bad situation, making it worse. And what does everybody do to come fix this? We go running back to the same government that helped cause this problem to fix this problem. And what is government's answer? Well, to a hammer, everything's a nail. And to government, everything is a new law. We need a new law to force people to do things. And they've been working lately on what are called antitrust laws. Now, I would like you to tell me where in the Constitution the United States is granted the authority to determine what is and is not a monopoly and when a company is or is not too big. They can regulate, they can make regular interstate commerce, but they don't have the authority to regulate commerce, period. And then I found this little piece of information. And it's in the versions of the antitrust law. Now, antitrust laws are basically when are companies being uncompetitive? Not that they've been fraudulent, not that they've done anything else illegal. We just don't like the way we think their practices are uncompetitive. Again, I don't remember the people consenting to the federal government determining what is and is not competitive. And then they found as they were negotiating and going through these kabuki theater of how are we going to protect everybody from big tech, we find that they're basing their regulations on the size of a company. And they're basing it based on what they called U.S.-based active monthly users. They abbreviate MAU. I don't know. Government seems to love their acronyms. But somehow, between the time that the bill was released and sent for markup, they changed the definition of online platform. See, now, It has to have at least 50 million monthly active users. And it was changed from an operating system to a mobile operating system. Now, if you're not familiar with technology, if you haven't spent, oh, say 30 years in IT, you look at this and going, what's the difference? Well, again, 500,000 to 50 million active users means they are targeting large companies. Basically, they're saying if you're, as long as you're not too big, you can cheat all you want. You can have all of these practices that we say are evil, non-competitive, they're terrible, they're awful, as long as you're not too big. So much for equal protection under the law. But the other interesting part was they changed from an operating system to a mobile operating system. Now, the difference may seem subtle, but everyone here who has a computer, that computer runs an operating system. Your phone runs an operating system. Your tablet runs an operating system. Your laptop, your desktop, probably your TV runs a form of an operating system. And the interesting thing is, operating system is a broad term. It means all of it. Computers, mobile devices, phones, tablets, you name it. Mobile operating systems are specifically devices that easily move. In other words, phones, tablets, watches, stuff like that. Now, my question simply is, again, where does Congress get the authority to do that? This is nothing to do with protecting you. This is government trying to control another form of speech. See, if Amazon, Facebook, Google, Apple, the actual targets of this legislation are controlled, if they're waiting to see what government's going to let them do, then guess what? Government once again controls the speech of these large companies. Now, do these large companies care? Not that I've seen. Sure, it may be a little uncomfortable, but the cost for compliance will be nothing compared to their annual budgets. But you see, the small companies, the Parlors, the Rumbles, the Gabs, the Telegrams, all of these companies, as they grow, are going to suddenly hit this stone wall where they have to go from a medium-sized company to a gigantic company in order to be profitable. As much as they talk about this being protecting the little guy, this has nothing to do with protecting the little guy. It has everything to do with protecting big tech, making it more difficult for competitors to come in and compete with big tech. Oh, but Paul, people say, you know, Facebook and YouTube, they have a monopoly. No, they don't. I'm sorry, I know that term is used a lot, especially by people who don't particularly like the way Facebook and YouTube and Twitter do business, but that does not make them a monopoly. See, in order for them to be a monopoly, they have to control the language, they have to control the market. In other words, they have to have exclusive ownership through legal privilege, command of supply, or concerted action. That's according to Merriam-Webster. Now, there's a little thing called the dictionary. So does Facebook, let's just use Facebook as an example, does Facebook own all of the social media environment? No. They own a large percentage of it, but they don't. Do they have command of supply? No, they don't. Can they, through concerted effort, control what's around them? To some extent. But there are competitors to Facebook, whether that be Twitter or Parler or Gab or the myriad of other smaller social media groups that are coming up as an alternative to Facebook. And Facebook can't stop them, at least not yet. But what happens when Congress puts in place a law that says, listen, once you start getting anywhere near big, well, then you're going to have to jump through a bunch of our hoops. And we're going to make it so that you have to, that jump from startup to real competitor to Facebook will be extremely expensive. Now, let's face it. The power that Facebook has is not by legal privileges or command of supply. It is not Facebook that makes Facebook so big. It is the billions of people that use it. The billions of people that pay attention to it. It is we, the people, who give Facebook its power. And put simply, we created it, we can ignore it, and we can get rid of it. We can. All you have to do is say, I'm not going to trust Facebook anymore. I'm not even saying you have to walk away. I know a lot of people who walked away from Facebook. I've walked away from Facebook. I'm not even saying you have to do that. Simply don't trust them. If we don't trust them, they have no power over us. And if they have no power over us, what do we care what they do? Oh, they have power over others. Well, that's their business. See, that's the big thing with all the antitrust lawsuits, everybody haranguing against big tech. It's not that they are really, the problem they are exposing is that they don't like the fact that other people trust them and they want to control it. It's the antithesis of freedom, the antithesis of liberty. Saying rather than educating my neighbor to the mistakes and the bad conduct and the bad faith of Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, I'm simply going to deny them the ability to use it. Or I'm going to regulate it to such an extent that my point of view wins. Thomas Jefferson said, I know no safe depository of the ultimate power of society, but the people themselves. Facebook doesn't have power. We are supposed to be the repository of power. Jefferson went on to say, and if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. I think it's a true corrective for abuses of any power. Rather than taking power away from the people, let us inform them. Let us help them understand. Let them show them the corruption of Facebook, the untrustworthiness of Facebook. But no, it's much easier for us to whine and scream and for a bunch of politicians to stand up and grandstand and say, we will fix this problem for you. All you have to do is give us control of social media directly or indirectly, and all of this will magically go away. Except it never does. It didn't happen when they did it to IBM or Microsoft or AT&T. What makes you think it's going to work when they do this with big tech? And what do you think will happen when these big tech companies no longer have the funds to offer all those wonderful free services, quote unquote, free services that people love so much? Aren't they going to complain that, wait a second, that was free and now you want me to pay for it? Well, I don't have the ability to do these things anymore. You've made me too small. I can't afford to subsidize, free Google Maps or free Google Voice or any of these things because I'm broken up. I don't have the financial wherewithal to do that. Wouldn't it have been much better if we go back and look at the fact that, listen, these companies are being protected from their bad behavior, from the consequences of their bad behavior by government. All we have to do, all Congress has to do to fix this problem is rewrite Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act to say that you cannot be sued for taking down content that is illegal, that is a violation of state or federal law. Leave the whole discretion of, well, might be considered offensive. Take the discretion out of it. Simply say, listen, if you're taking down material that is illegal, you're protected from lawsuit. If you take down any other material, you are open to lawsuit. If you violate the terms and conditions by taking down someone's content, if you violate the contract you have by demonetizing or throttling or shadow banning material, then you should be subject to suit. Let the people petition the government for a redress of grievances. No, We're going to take one mistake, add another mistake on top of that, and now we're going to add another mistake on top of that, and then surprise, surprise, nothing's going to get fixed, and we're all going to sit around going, gee, I wonder what we can do now. Well, let's take a look. You know that little thing called National Public Radio? You know that illegal organization funded by your tax dollars that Congress has absolutely no authority to control, to fund, to publish. It's an abomination to the Constitution. Well, now, according to a Georgia Public Broadcasting reporter by the name of Stephen Fowler, your tax money is being used to lie to you. That NPR is misrepresenting information. They're flat out lying about information regarding the Georgia election. So now we have a politically funded, a government funded organization that is, biased towards one of the two major political parties. See, they complained, NPR said in a tweet that they were complaining that the Star News Group, the Star News Network, what they call a network of pro-Trump sites. I don't know. I use Star Networks for several of my articles. I haven't seen them being that pro-Trump, but hey, whatever. Well, now they're saying, well, they're trying to influence things by looking alike. In other words, you have a group of affiliated organizations that have a similar look and feel. That sounds dastardly, doesn't it? No, it sounds like marketing. It sounds like, gee, if we're going to have a bunch of related papers all owned by the same company, maybe we should have them look alike so that people are comfortable with it. But all right, that's marketing. That just shows their bias because it's pro-Trump. They don't care if you're pro-Biden what it looks like. But then they went on. And on July 2nd, they had an article that falsely claimed that the Star News suggested that the ballots in Georgia may not have been legitimate. Now, I've read the article. Star News did say that there are missing chain of custody documents, according to a Fulton County official. In other words, NPR is not news. They're propaganda. It's the NPR is now national propaganda radio. I could no more trust what a government-fed arm. I could no more trust NPR than I could trust Pravda. And they're just one example. I mean, at least when you talk about NBC, CBS, and the other litany of corporate media, they're at least privately owned. They're just as devoted to the Democratic Party, but they're privately owned. But here are American taxpayer dollars being illegally taken to fund an illegal radio program, an illegal broadcasting program that has no authorization from the Constitution. And they're being used, and it's being used for propaganda articles to benefit one political party. Why are we still spending money? If NPR is so wonderful, let them fund themselves. Let them have more of their little fundraising drives. Let them give away more of their little goodies and earn the money to be put on to be on the radio. But the taxpayers paying for this is an abomination to the Constitution. It is a violation of the 10th Amendment. It is a violation of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, I believe. Yes, Clause 1, about the use of the taxes that Congress collects. But yet no one is complaining about, well, people are complaining about this. Who's talking about defunding NPR? How about we defund NPR as an illegal public organization? I don't care if you like NPR. I don't care if you like watching. If the programs are so great for you, chuck in some money to their constant fundraising and pay for it. But to expect an American citizen to subsidize your viewing habits makes you greedy. It makes you, dare I say, it puts you on exactly the same par that people who want you to pay for their education, for their health care, for their housing. You just want other people's money to pay for your stuff. That is the definition of greed. And gee, while we're talking about defunding things, anybody question the Federal Bureau of Investigations? I mean, but over the last couple of weeks, they have arrested 17 people from Florida to California with charges from assaulting police officers to criminal trespass to something called destruction of property in special maritime and territorial jurisdictions and aiding and abetting. Why? Because people on June 6th entered the Capitol. Oh, by the way, there's video evidence that at least some of them entered with the permission of the Capitol Police. Now, I don't see the FBI going after the people that attacked, looted, and burned federal courthouses in Portland and Seattle and Washington, D.C. I don't see people going after, I don't see FBI going after the people that rioted in Washington, D.C. Around the George Floyd incident. No. The people who questioned the validity of the democratically won presidential election. See, the FBI didn't worry when people claimed that Trump was not legitimately elected, but you question the Democrats and the power of government falls on you like a ton of bricks. How about we simply return the FBI to enforcing federal law? Now, trespass generally is not a federal crime. There's nothing in the Constitution about the United States controlling trespass. It did happen in a federal city, though. But then again, Congress's power is to legislate for the city, so why isn't the city police dealing with this? See, the problem is we have the FBI again being used for political purposes rather than legal ones. See, Attorney General Garland was bragging about the fact that he wants to hold all the January 6th perpetrators accountable. Well, okay, I don't have a problem with that. Is why is it only the January 6th perpetrators? Why are the perpetrators from all of 2020 ignored? Why? Because the FBI has become just as corrupt politically as the rest of the federal government. They no longer apply the law, they apply political dogma. For example, one of the people that, one of the defendants mentioned that, you know, her house was raided by 20 agents. She was interrogated. She and her family were interrogated by FBI agents. They asked her who they voted for and which political party they identified with. What does that have to do with a crime? Oh, it does when you're a politicized hack organization. How do we trust? We've given the FBI powerful law enforcement powers, the ability to carry guns in our name, to enforce laws in our name, and now they are applying those laws based on who a person voted for. Not only is that none of their business, should that not be a criminal offense for an FBI agent to during the interview to ask you who you voted for? What does it matter? Are you telling me if this person voted for Biden, you'd let him go? This is tyranny. This is the type of nonsense we heard about, I heard about, in the Soviet Union, in Mao's China, in Vietnam, with under Pol Pot in Cambodia, that happens in Venezuela and in Cuba. You vote for the wrong people, then you get raided. You vote for the right people, maybe we'll let you go. Do you trust the FBI? This defendant was asked if she followed QAnon. Oh, by the way, the FBI sent to lawmakers a report about entitled Adherence to QAnon Conspiracy Theory by Some Domestic Violent Extremists. Seems to me at this point, basically, if you disagree with the Democratic Party, you're considered a domestic violent extremist. The FBI asked her if she belonged to Oath Keepers or Three Percenters. Again, none of their business. We have the right to peaceably assemble. You can assemble with whoever you want. This is an infringement on our rights by the FBI. And where are the cries? Where's the hue and cry for the unjust treatment of people? Even if those who broke the law on January 6th, the Eighth Amendment says excessive bail should not be required nor excessive fines imposed. Well, guess what? If you've been held for months, 4-6 months, for nonviolent crimes, where is your bail? Is that not a form of excessive punishment? Is that not a form of excessive bail saying we're not going to allow you bail? Why? Because you're the wrong political party. And now we have the House of Representatives creating a kangaroo court, a witch trial, group to investigate what happened. Well, you know, Ms. Pelosi and all of you other political hack weenies in the House of Representatives that voted for this commission, how dare you try to impose a political penalty for people who disagree with you? How dare we declared independence from this. We fought against this. Men and women, American men and women died. They died in World War I, World War II. They died in Korea, Vietnam, to prevent this type of political tyranny. Yet here we are in America, watching it happen again. And here we are in America going, oh, well, there's nothing I can do with it. Wrong. There is something you can do about it. But it's going to require you to get up from your seat, stop whining about Facebook, learn your rights, and learn how to defend and assert them. And it's going to take a little bit of work. But you know what? We can have fun doing it. This summer, I am going through my Knowing Your Rights tour. I'm traveling the country to talk to people so they recognize what their rights are, when they're violated, how to defend and assert them. If you want to find out more, head to constitutionstudy.com/tour. You'll find out more about the events. You'll find my schedule, where I'm going to be. If I'm not coming near you, there's a form on the bottom you can fill out and see if I can come to your location. It doesn't have to be a big location. I'm not charging people to show up for this. Most of the places have been quite kind. They have provided a hotel room for me, but that wasn't a requirement. I'm not charging for this. I'm doing this because I'm disturbed by the state of freedom and liberty in America, and I want to do something about it. So please, head to constitutionstudy.com/tour, find out more about the tour, and please invite me to your location. If it's just a group of people at a restaurant or at a hotel somewhere or in a park that are sitting down and talking about the Constitution, I will do everything I can to be there and help spread this word. Now, before I hit the break, I want to remind you about HealthyCell.com. They have some great tools, some great vitamins. They've reinvented the vitamin. No longer is it a group of pills you have to swallow. It's a nice little travel-ready gel pack. Take the gel pack, mix it with a drink. It's easy to use. I've been using them. I've really enjoyed them. I'm going to recommend you try the Immune Super Boost. Again, I'm going to be on the road. When you're on the road a lot, you know, I call it the crud. You just feel bad because you're exposed to so many things. So I'm taking the Immune Super Boost to make sure I remain alert, I remain healthy, I don't catch whatever's floating around out there, and I can get back to doing this work without having to take some sick time. So again, head to healthycell.com/outloud, and as an Out Loud listener, you'll get 20% off your first order. That's healthycell.com/outloud for 20% off your first order. Give them a try. I believe you'll enjoy them as much as I have, and I'll be right back after this short break.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And today we're talking about, well, lawlessness and the fact that the American people allowing this lawlessness to continue is leading us directly to tyranny. In a recent example, we have the Capitol, Nancy Pelosi in the House, still have the Capitol grounds of the United States shut down. Well, not completely shut down. They just don't want certain activities happening on the Capitol. Are they quaking in their boots because a group of citizens entered the Capitol when they didn't want them to? That the Capitol Police let them in? Or could it be that they just don't want the chance that, you know, someone might challenge what they had to say? Well, right now, a Christian social, political, and human rights activist is apparently suing this Reverend Pat Mahoney. Said that they wanted to hold a prayer meeting on the west side of the Capitol. Why did they want to hold a prayer meeting? Well, according to Mr. Mahoney, they want to ask God to protect and bless America, to ensure and protect our freedoms, possibly even to pray for their leaders, as the Bible tells us to. So they followed the rules and they applied to the Capitol Police boards of permission to do so. Now, stop and just think for a second. Again, this is the U.S. Capitol, meaning it's a federal city, meaning it's run by Congress. Congress establishes the laws for the city of Washington, D.C. Therefore, the First Amendment does apply, so Congress can make no law prohibiting the right to peaceably assemble. But they have to ask permission to assemble. Now, anyone else there find that just a little bit wrong? That you need permission from government to exercise a constitutionally protected right? That the government has the permission to deny you your right simply because they say so? So we have the Capitol grounds effectively shut down. But again, as I said, not shut down to everyone. See, apparently lobbyists and visitors are permitted. You're just not allowed to exercise your right to peaceably assemble. Now, the Constitution, according to Article 6, Clause 2, is the supreme law of the land. So what's happening now is lawlessness. We're going to ignore the Constitution. We're going to shut down the Capitol. There is no active threat I know of, so this is purely a political statement. This is not a national security statement. In fact, according to Mr. Mahoney, he said, quote, "In my court case, the government presented no evidence whatsoever, not one piece, not one comment that peaceful First Amendment activities are a threat to national security or lead to violence." So in other words, even the government isn't saying, you know, that they've got evidence that should these people decide to meet, they'd be a threat to national security. Of course, and again, national security doesn't trump the Constitution. But here again, we have lawlessness. Now, is this Nancy Pelosi's fault? Is it the democratically controlled House of Representatives' fault? No, it's the fault of the American people. Let me ask you. Have you contacted your representative and say, why is the Capitol still shut down? Why are the people denied access to their government offices? Why? Why are we not allowed to gather and peaceably assemble to petition our government through group communication? Why? I mean, are we reminding them that they swore or affirmed an oath to support the Constitution? That they are the servants of the people, not their masters? Yet here we have just another lawless act by what is a lawless government, and the American people are simply sitting back and going, oh well, at least most of us are. And in yet another example of lawless government, an organization called Christians Engage. This is a biblical educational organization. They teach what the Bible says about society and public and government. And they applied to the IRS, the internal, or if you prefer, the infernal revenue service, for tax-exempt status under Section 501c3. They were denied. Why were they denied? Well, according to the exempt organization's director, Stephen Martin, their application was denied because Christians Engage, quote, engages in prohibited political campaign intervention. How did they do that? Well, according to Mr. Martin, quote, the Christians Engage, quote, operates for a substantial, non-exempt private purpose and for the private interests of the Republican Party. You heard me right. The IRS deems biblical education as promoting the political, the Republican Party. I'm trying to figure this out. See, they specifically, Mr. Martin in his letter specifically pointed to Christians Engage education of believers on national issues that are central to their belief in the Bible as the inerrant word of God, namely the sanctity of life, the definition of marriage, biblical justice, freedom of speech, defense, and borders and immigration, as well as the U.S. and Israel relations. These were, according to the IRS, now no longer tax exempt. Why? Because for some reason, Mr. Martin believes, and in his words, quote, Bible teachings are typically affiliated with the Republican Party and candidates. Now, I'm looking at Section 501c3, the Internal Revenue Code, and it lists the different organizations, including religious organizations, that can be tax exempt. And one of the restrictions is that, quote, no substantial part of the activities which is carrying on propaganda or otherwise attempting to influence legislation and which does not participate in or intervene in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. So let me get this right. According to a single person, Mr. Martin, the fact that the Republican Party tends to be more aligned with the biblical worldview, with what the Bible says, makes the Bible a Republican document? Isn't it the other way around, Mr. Martin? Isn't it the fact that because the Bible, which is, depending on parts of it, between 2 and 6,000 years old, doesn't that rather predate the Republican Party, Mr. Martin? The fact that they're talking about specific worldview issues, sanctity of life, definition of marriage, biblical justice, freedom of speech, borders, immigration, U.S.-Israeli relations. Aren't you politicizing the work that they're doing? Not they that's politicizing it. But that's what happens when you have a lawless nation. When we look to the government to define tax arguments, to tell us what is and is not a charitable organization. Tell me, Mr. Martin, are you going to rescind the tax-exempt letters for, the NAACP, the ACLU, or any other organization that routinely campaigns for, let's say, that promotes a worldview that more aligns with the Democratic Party? I'd love to see it. At least that would be fair. I wouldn't be right, but it would at least be fair. But no, again, we have a lawless government picking and choosing where it's going to apply the laws to get the outcome that it wants. Now let's take a slightly different tack. I hear a lot of people talk about separation of church and state. I like to remind people that those words don't exist in the Constitution, although the idea that government cannot interfere in the operation of a religion, in your free exercise of religion, is, and that's a form of separation of church and state. But I found this interesting article. This came from California Catholic Daily. See, it appears some U.S. Catholic bishops are drafting a document on whether or not priests can deny communion to politicians who support abortion. Now, the Roman Catholic Church recognizes that abortion is a taking of a human life. It is a violation of, therefore, the Ten Commandments. It is murder. It is, therefore, against Catholic doctrine. So the question is, if a person does not abide by Catholic doctrine, can they be sanctioned by the Catholic Church? In this case, whether can they be denied communion? Okay. To me, that's for the Roman Catholic Church to decide. However, one House Democrat has implied that if the Catholic Church does that, they could lose, they should lose, its tax-exempt status. In other words, if a church actually bans Roman Catholic members that act in contradiction to Roman Catholic teaching, that they would lose their tax-exempt status. Why? Well, according to Representative Jared Huffman, quote, if they're going to politically weaponize religion by rebuking Democrats who support women's reproductive choice, then a rebuke of their tax-exempt status may be in order. Who's politicizing what, Mr. Huffman? The Roman Catholic Church was against abortion long before Roe v. Wade. It has been a staple of Christian teaching for 2,000 years. Yet all of a sudden, since you don't like it, you want to punish the Roman Catholic Church for not agreeing with you. Well, you know what, Mr. Huffman? To me, that disqualifies you for office because you have now put a religious test into the application of the law. You have established a religion, or you're attempting to, Mr. Huffman. You're saying your religion will be recognized as long as you don't disagree with abortion. Mr. Huffman, that is a violation of your oath of office. But it's just another example of a lawless government. Tell me, where is the ethics committee charge against Mr. Huffman for interfering with the religious actions, the religious exercise of the American people? Where? I've seen none of it. Now, maybe it's out there. I haven't seen it. But here you have a member of the House threatening to use his power to harm a religious organization for not bowing the knee to his preferred position, his worldview. That is a lawless government. And what is the outcome of lawless government? What happens when we let governments ignore the laws to do what they think is best for us? Well, we end up with things like lockdowns and shutdowns and mask mandates and whatnot. Well, there's a new interesting study out from the RAND Corporation and the University of Southern California. This found that lockdowns that were mandated in response to the virus didn't save lives. Even worse, they may have actually resulted in more deaths than would have occurred if shelter-in-place orders had not been mandated. They noted that, quote, following the implementation of shelter-in-place policies, excess mortality increases. The increase in excess mortality is statistically significant in the immediate weeks following the shelter-in-place implementation. So, in other words, more deaths than expected, excess deaths. Well, when you sheltered in place, they found those numbers went up, not down. In fact, they went on to say, quote, we failed to find that countries or U.S. states that implemented shelter-in-place policies earlier and in which shelter-in-place policies had longer to operate had lower excess deaths than countries / U.S. states that were slower to implement shelter-in-place policies. We also failed to observe differences in excess death trends before and after the implementation of shelter-in-place policies based on pre-shelter-in-place COVID-19 death rates. The science also suggests that lockdown orders, which destroyed small business, destroyed the economy, may have been more deadly than allowing our economy and society to remain open. See, what happens when you have an illegal government, when they ignore the laws? Well, they take actions that can have, and sometimes, deadly consequences. Not just the excess deaths of lockdowns and shutdowns. not simply the lives ruined by destroying the economy and the associated depression, suicide, drug, and alcohol abuse. But that's because we allowed this outlaw government to do things they're not authorized to. The Declaration of Independence states that government's only just power comes from the consent of the governed. We consent to government via constitution. So when a government acts outside of our consent, their actions are unjust. They're outlaw. They're illegal. Yet since most Americans have no clue what the Constitution actually says, much less the Constitution of their state, they have no clue of the actual powers of government or their power to control their government. They are allowed to run rampant, to run wild, regardless of the consequences. Take, for example, landlords in California, especially those who are small property owners. You know, we always hear the Democrats railing against big corporations and how evil they are. Yet it seems like so much of they do supports big corporations and really destroys a little guy. So first we had the CDC, illegal, immoral. I don't care what the Supreme Court says. When it comes to this, they are buffoons. The illegal mandate that you not evict people who don't pay rent. That is a violation of the law. It's a violation. It's not a power delegated to the United States to encumber contracts. But California takes it a step farther. See, finally, what do we see? We see California starting to loosen the reins on their illegal shutdown and control of the economy, of the people of California. And these poor landlords that have been trying to scrape by when they have homes and businesses and places where they're not getting their rent paid, but they still got to pay taxes. You know, I find it interesting that the CDC didn't say that landlords could not pay taxes, or that the California say, listen, if we're not going to be able to collect rent, you don't have to pay your taxes. Oh, no, we didn't hear that. Government still wants their money. But just now, as these things are dying, as they're finally shutting down, what does California do? They extend their eviction moratorium. So it was supposed to end on June 30th. Now it's going to go through to September 30th. Tell me, this isn't a kick in the head to every small property landlord in California. Everybody that's been scraping by, trying to make do without getting all of their rent because Governor Newsom and the oligarchs in Sacramento say so. And just when that light at the end of the tunnel seems to be there, it turns out to be a train of California government. Imagine you're a landlord. What are you supposed to do? The government just said that you cannot enforce your contract. That's exactly what California is saying. A lease is a contract. It's an agreement between two individuals. One person provides the land. The other person pays rent. If the person doesn't pay rent, then guess what? The renter gets kicked out. Except California suddenly said, no. What happens to these pieces of land when the small businesses that run them can't? They can't survive paying the bills, paying the taxes with restricted income. What happens then? I'm sure big businesses will be more than happy to snatch up that property. This is what happens when you allow illegal governments, or I should say lawless governments, to perform illegal acts and destroy in the name of being kind. Kind to whom? Kind to whom? This is not a, oh, by the way, oh, it's a minor inconvenience. This is messing with people's lives. How kind is it to the landlord, the family that depends on the income from that rental property to pay the bills, to fund their lives, to offset the costs of other expenses they have to incur? What about them? it always seems that, you know, they point and say, look at those evil rich corporations that are forcing poor little Californians to pay rent. What about the small mom and pop? Just when California was coming back, just when it looked like freedom and liberty might be making a resurgence in California, they kick you in the head again. Now, Californians have a decision. In this September, they're going to decide whether or not they made a bad choice with Governor Newsom. I was talking about this on another program earlier today. Well, here's my question. Let's say that California does say, that's it, no more Governor Newsom, that's enough, we're tired of petty tyrants. Who are they going to elect in this place? Another petty tyrant? Albert Einstein said that doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, is the definition of insanity. Well, if California is going to replace one petty potentate, one person who believes they're a demigod, with another, is anything going to change? See, that's really the question I have to ask, not just of California, of the entire United States. When you look at what government does and you are angry at it, you're exasperated by it, well, what are you doing? Are you removing people? There's a lot of talk about term limits. We need to term limit these people out. Okay, you term limit them out. Are you going to hire someone just like them to do the exact same thing? That's the dirty little secret that people don't want to talk about. It's not term limits. It's not how long these people are in office. It's not how badly they abuse their oath of office. It's not how badly they break the law. It's the fact that the American people stand for it. That we do not remove them when they violate their oath of office. That we rehire them when they lie and they cheat and they steal and they destroy. That when they don't do their jobs, we hire them back anyway. Oh, sure, every once in a while we have a quote-unquote tidal wave, right? We had the red wave, the blue wave, the green wave. We're going to recall Governor Newsom. So what? If you replace Governor Newsom with someone just like him, what difference does it make? If you change a few seats in Congress from one party to another, but they're all cut from the same cloth, what difference does it make? If you can tell a politician is lying to you because their lips are moving, what does it say about the American people that they keep hiring liars, cheats, and thieves? See, the problem with an outlaw government is not the people in government. It's the people who hire the people in government. At our centennial, back in 1876, President Garfield said, "Now more than ever, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it is because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, is because the people demand these high qualities to represent them in the national legislature." Well, what's true of Congress, isn't that true of the legislature in California as well? Isn't that just as true for whoever hired Director Martin or the IRS or the Capitol Police? If there is ignorance, recklessness, and corruption, if there is illegality and immorality in our government, it is because we, the people, tolerate it. We tolerate the lawlessness. And until we demand better, it will continue. You can change the seats on the deck chairs on the Titanic. That ship is still going down. The bad news is, as much as you look for somebody to fix this problem, the answer rests right in the mirror. It is time that we educate ourselves about the Constitution, about our rights, and most importantly, our duties as citizens of a republic, and that we start acting like citizens of a republic and less like subjects of an oligarchy. Now, I recorded an interview with Malcolm Out Loud on his program, Voice of a Nation. And we talked about, well, we started talking about the attempt to pack the Supreme Court and ways to stop it. But we actually had a very interesting discussion about the need of the people to understand, to educate ourselves, because government won't do it for us. So maybe check that out. You can find all of my shows as well as all of his. They come out on podcasts. You can also find them on the website. So usually about a day or two after this broadcast, you can find it on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart, basically anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you do me a favor, go to Apple Podcasts and leave me a rating and review. Subscribe to the podcast. It helps other people find this type of content. Make sure you head to AmericaOutloud.com. Check out all the different programs. Like I said, you'll find me on Voice of a Nation. I've got a couple other people I want to interview on this program. Because this information, the articles, the videos, the podcasts, the stories, these are the tools of education. We need to share them with others. Because, as I believe Thomas Jefferson said, if you wish to be ignorant and free, you want what never was and never will be. The bad news is it's going to take a little bit of work. The good news is it's in your hands. So please do that for me. Do the rating and review. Help people find it. Share these stories. Share this information. Because that is how you can protect your liberty, your children's liberty, and your grandchildren's liberty. Not by looking to who sits in the Oval Office, not by which party controls Congress or who gets appointed to the Supreme Court, but by knowing your rights, recognizing when they're violated, and being prepared to defend and assert them.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.